Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. I hope everyone had a great week, and I hope you have an even better weekend to follow. TGIF. This is direct, and we've come full circle again. Here we are. It's Friday. One more time? I guess that's a good thing. It could be worse, right? Hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
All right. What's doing?
Well, you know, not too much. Not too much. I think it's bedtime. At least that's what my yawns keep telling me. I think I have a wild wake up. Oh, so yes, not too much is happening. Got a nice board tonight. It's just a real pretty selection of poetry, and I'm looking forward to that. And we also have Kate joining us on the board, Weaver of Dreams. And
hello,
we also
Kate.
Have Laurent with us. Hello, Laurent. Hello, Kate. How are you tonight? Excuse me. Katie.
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Hey.
Kate, are you on quiet mode or? I don't want to use the M word too.
Oh, no. I'm mutated this early in the night. Oh, no. I pride myself on doing that at least 3 times. Oh, so that's another 2 to come.
I hate when I do it too. But, you know, sometimes we just get caught up in it, you know?
Yeah.
You'd think by now I would know I put myself on mute. I have to unmute myself. But it doesn't quite work that way. Sometimes. Not always.
Yeah,
so, yes.
I'm sorry, I was going to say, I think we actually managed not to do a mutation on one show. I can't remember when it was, but I don't think anybody had. I think it was when we first realized we were doing it and people got embarrassed. So they were very good. We're watching it. Yeah. So I've got my little blue light flashing. That means something, doesn't it? Oh, no. That's a red light. Sorry.
It means the coppers are off you.
Sorry, what?
It means the coppers are on your tail.
No. I hope not. I'm in my bedroom.
You've been looking like hiring them strippers again, haven't you?
I'm so sorry. What did you say?
You've been hiring them strippers again, haven't you? The ones dressed as coppers.
No. I can't do it. I can't do it anymore because they won't accept my credit card. So that's me screwed. Well, that's me not screwed.
Oh my God. I don't know, Katie.
Yeah. Start a bit early, aren't we?
Well, I think somebody else started it. It certainly wasn't me, but somebody else certainly started it.
I wasn't me.
Oh, I'm such a good man.
Yeah, I'm joking. I'm sorry. Not really.
Every time I hear the word strippers, and someone talking about their debit card or their credit card makes me very nervous because I'm always trying to figure out where they're sliding them. We don't need to get into that, Kate. You can tell us all later.
Oh, my goodness. In my mind, I have a wonderful life, but unfortunately, it's in my mind.
That's when you turn them around and say, crack me a smile.
Oh, oh my goodness.
That sounds like
TMI, Rex. TMI.
TMI. Look, that's
well.
Oh, you got to be able to run that silver stripe somewhere.
That's right.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. Hey, listen, we got a lot of poetry on this board tonight. What do you think? Think I should shut up and get it started?
Oh yes.
Absolutely. Let's have that.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's get the party started, and we're going to put up a piece by Daniel Buscino. And Rex, do you mind reading that and kicking us off for the night? Yeah, it'd be wonderful.
Sure. And it's called The Immortal, Part 2, by Daniel Buscino. Oh, I can remember childhood, dreams of a memory as a cloud changes shape on its trip between horizons. Years merge like brush strokes on canvas. Yesterday is no different than decades past. Today, I walk among ghosts who listen to echoes off canyon walls. The vision of a flower is only what the sunlight wishes to sing, but my vision is more visionary. As each breath and a runner's stride pushes blood to tired legs with finish line fantasy eyes. There is no finish line in my race, as the haunting of a ghost never ends. 100 years brings the blink of an eye to start to blink again. 1,000 and humanity has no past, as a child forgets training wheels. 100 times more, and I am drifting in the cosmos. Earth is but playpen's past, with home just antiquated dialect. 1,000 times more, I am not even a story lost, far more alive with every quantum entanglement, as an exploding star atom eventually becomes a memory in a mind. And those memories in those atoms, they move on, mostly gone, but all is still me, somehow. And poem. All right, Katie, why don't we start with you, please?
Well, I don't know. Why don't you start with me? It's a very good idea. Right. I love this. Daniel has got this ability to merge poetry with science or science fiction or, you know, whatever is on his mind at the time. So I love this one. The vision of a flower is only what the sunlight wishes to sing, but my vision is more visionary. As each breath in a runner's stride pushes blood to tired legs with finish line fantasy eyes. Now that's a lovely, That's a lovely line. The finished line, fantasy eyes. Yes, I thought this was extremely, extremely well done. I like the brush strokes on canvas and no different from decades past, which true, we don't learn. We just keep on doing the same things. So yes, I really enjoyed this, Daniel. I wish I'd managed to get hold of Immortal Part 2. Immortal, okay. Yeah, sorry. I'm whittling. I do apologize. And over to you.
Hi. Thank you, Katie. Laurent, how about you?
Yeah. The Life of a Ghost is not so much fantasy as it is a projected reality, maybe. The sense of time alters vastly. 100 years, all you've done is blink an eye and start to blink again. 1,000, humanity is dismissed. 100 times that, and Earth is but plate pens past. The home just antiquated dialect, but just a memory in history. And 1,000 times beyond that, and he becomes simply atoms moving on, mostly gone, but always still me somehow, kind of saying that no matter how much time goes by, the atoms of what you were are still there, maybe disassociated, but still there. It's a fascinating concept. Nicely done.
Thank you, Ron. And Jeannie, how about you?
I have to agree with both Kate and Laurent. You know, I thought it was a clever piece, and it was a walk down the memory of an immortal, how they fade through the years along with their memories as they fade. But still, you know, that ending, you know, and those memories and those atoms, they move on, mostly gone, but always still me somehow. It takes me to a poem I remember from years ago that someone I know had written. And it's funny because, you know, we breathe in and we breathe out, and every breath that we expel lingers. So, you know, it's a take on that. You know, even though we're not the same as we were and things aren't the same as they were, we're still floating around in here, you know, in this big old huge fishbowl. Not really a fishbowl, but yeah, I think you know what I mean. And I thought it was well done. So great job, Dan, and thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Gene. I like that. I was kind of walking on the angle. It reminds me of the TV series Highlander. There was one character in there who was oldest of the old, oldest of all of them. He's more than 5,000 years old. His name is Mythos. This kind of walks that same angle. You remember the early days and how you got there, and then each successive century rolls on by. You've got your loves, your wives, your other lovers. They pass, but you still move on through the centuries, and before long you notice that things do change in the cosmos. Yet, at the end of all things, the only thing that really hasn't changed is the essence of you, except the learning that you've garnered through the life that you've lived and everything that you've seen in between. And the idea is, even though the others passed and they are that touch of memory, those atoms dispersed, you still remember those that have gone before you because they were part of that life that you lived. So, I like that. Nice, Dan. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, we're back to you.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it. I liked it. Okay. Let me just see. Copy. Okay, Kate, if I can get you to read this next one. This is called Oh Father, a Tribute to Walt Whitman by Joseph Moon.
Of course. Yes. Right. I think I have it. Yeah, got it. It's a good start. And I'm off mute. Wonderful. Okay, Oh Father, a Tribute to Walt Whitman. Poet to Come. Do you want me to read this bit? Okay. Poets to Come, written by Walt Whitman. Take via his masterpiece, Leaves of Grass, page 10. Poets to Come, orators, singers, musicians to come. Not today. It's to justify me and answer what I am for. But you, a new brood, native, athletic, continental, greater than before known, arouse, for you must justify me. I myself but write one or two indicative words for the future. I could advance a moment only to wheel and hurry back in the darkness. I am a man who, sauntering along without fully stopping, turns a casual look upon you and then averts his face, leaving it to you to prove and define it, expecting the main things from you. O Father, today writers are ireful, sore at our some are stamped to a violent drum, whilst politicians still try to start war. Poets wonder, who are we writing for? O Father, I hear what they say. I'll try to reply. I'll try to justify. But mine tongue is a stone, thy verse is a saving grace, setting me free. O Father, through the night, every night, I ponder thee long and grow languid. Mine eyes need a suture, yet like an uncut diamond they sparkle, leading me into thy light. O Father, whilst mine spirit soars, mine body tis weak. The world must butcher, the world being butchered, and it's such a bloody disgrace. O Father, every one of thy words rang true, as if 'twas written in thy soul, from thee to me, than from me to you. O Father, fallen cold and dead. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. And Lamont, why don't we start with you, please?
We're ashamed to admit that Walt Whitman and I are just nodding acquaintances, and I wish I knew this particular poem. Joseph Moon is a skillful writer, and I can only assume that what he's written is a close parody of the original. Today writers are ireful, sore are some, artists dance to a violent drum, whilst politicians still try to start war. Poets wonder, who are you writing for? You know, sometimes, most of the time, our words fall on deaf ears, and we hope to get a few people to respond to whatever it is we're saying. I imagine that's what Joseph says, or at least means. The ending, like a diamond, cuts deep. Oh, Father, fallen cold and dead. It is what it is. Very sad.
Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I think Joe did a great job with this. His rights are always very well done, and he always nods to the classics in one way or another. And it's funny, he must have known I was thinking about him, because the other day I was saying, I haven't seen him in ages. And I think that this really holds true to his form. It was well done. It was well written. I'm not familiar with this poem, but that's not unusual for me. I have to say, I like this. Where did I pick it up? Okay. I'm a man who's sauntering along without fully stopping, turns a casual look upon you and then averts his face, leaving it to you to prove and define it, expecting the main things from you. O Father, today writers are ireful, sore, and some artistic stance to a violent drum. Whilst politicians still try to start war, poets wonder who are they writing for. And I think that that in itself was very nicely done, because, you know, way back when, you know, poetry was the way to express yourselves about, you know, legal matters, political matters and such. And I read that so many years ago, I don't even know where I read it, but I remember I read it. And I think that he pulled something in with that, gave it more of a, I don't know, it was like it took it back to an authentic place. And I appreciated that very much. But a great job, and I love the O Father, you know, in each stanza from there down. You know, it was just, I thought it was just well done. So great job, Joe, and thanks for sharing with us. Absolutely.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. All right, Kate, mm-hmm. you got to read it. How about you?
Yes, I enjoyed this a lot. Again, like everyone else, I'm not familiar with this. But I love that. You picked the stanza that I was thinking of, Jean, so that great minds think alike mm-hmm. again, because those were the ones that piqued my interest. Yeah, I thought that. I love that, sauntering along without fully stopping, turns a casual look upon you and then averts his face. That, it's a simple little thing, but you can see it happening. And he's saying, okay, it's like a lineup. Can you remember me? No, you can't. I liked it a lot. I really did. But I do love the these and those. It just tickles me. I just think I would love to be able to speak like that. In real life, in common day-to-day parlance, I hear what they say, but mine tongue tis a stone. Wonderful, wonderful, beautifully done. So, yes, I thoroughly enjoyed this. I'm obviously going to get hold of that and have a good read of it. Well, thank you, Joseph. Beautifully done.
Nice. Thank you, everyone. I think the old father angle kind of hits on two notes, but it's more as a homage to Whitman himself, but it also hits on the thought of offering up a touch of spirituality because he rolls into as if it was written in thy soul, from thee to me, then from me to you, mm-hmm. O Father, fallen, cold, and dead. That notion of things shouldn't be as forgotten as they are, where we don't look back to that which came before and still honor those notes. And the idea of the spirit, maybe a touch of spirituality falls to hate, to have this kind of thought and language can only come with a bit of grace from somewhere outside of oneself first before it actually bursts in voice and verse. So nicely done, Joseph. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, where back to you.
Okie doke. Well, Laurent, that brings me to you. I'll put this piece up, and this is called Acts of Kindness by Matt 29.
Acts of Kindness. When everything around seems bleak, the smallest act can bring kindness, cementing belief in personal strength, standing light in the darkest of times. Forgiveness is key to unlocking happiness, recognizing your humanity and pride, allowing your truth to shine brightly, discarding feelings of unworthiness, letting your vulnerability stand proud, trusting one day at a time analogy, doing no more than you can do, releasing the veil of tears freely, accepting the support when offered, only for a hug and emotional salvation. No gift is ever without meaning. Securing the glue with which to mend again, delight in simplicity of human kindness and caring. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, why don't we start with you, please?
Every time. I thought this was a great write by Matt. It had a lot to say, and I think he really put everything in great perspective here. Forgiveness is key to unlocking happiness, recognizing your humanity and pride, allowing your truth to shine brightly, discarding feelings of unworthiness. A lot of almost advice, I guess I could say, throughout this poem. And I think that he really did an excellent job putting it together. And, And congratulations on the gold. I see that you won gold on this piece. So excellent job, and thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. Katie, how about you?
Yes, this is what I consider to be what life should eventually come to, where people can show they care. A little bit of kindness, it goes a long, long, long way. You'd be surprised. A smile is enough. If somebody you're walking towards is having a particularly bad day, a smile it just makes you feel better. So I fully agree with this. I think it's beautifully written. Sorry, I was going to say something and I completely lost it. Isn't that awful when that happens? anyway, yes, I think it was beautifully done. I want everybody to love everybody, and then we'll all be happy. So thank you so much, Matt, for that.
There you go. Thank you, Katie. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
The poem really reflects the importance of being able to forgive yourself for who you are and accepting the acts of kindness that are there to bring you up out of spiritual darkness, of anxiety, out of depression. You have to recognize your humanity and pride, and your truth is important. It needs to shine brightly, as the poem says. But most of all, letting your vulnerability stand proud at times when we drop our armor and we are open and vulnerable. And in so doing, it's kind of like an emotional release. And the poet says that, releasing the veil of tears freely, accepting the support when offered. It's so hard sometimes to reach out and take that hand up that is there to help us, because we don't need it, but inside we desperately do. That's the human kindness and caring is the last line that delights us, because it's simple, but boy, it's not shallow. Excellent piece.
Great comment, Laurent. You're absolutely right on that. And I think once you actually understand and retain that notion, then you can actually pay it forward, so it then becomes a continuing thread throughout the world, which can be looked back upon as that note of coming together and kind of dissolving the note to everybody's sin-filled and evil, but really just brothers and sisters under the skin to begin with. So nicely done, everybody. Thank you. And thank you, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jean, it's Rebecca to you.
Thank you, though. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is called She's Coming For You by Darkened Auras. I'm going to give that one a read. So. She's coming for you in the pale moonlight, a once beautiful bride, now a decomposed sight. She's coming for you until death do us part. There's an afterlife, though, for her wilting heart. She's coming to get you, to merge your life with her own, to embrace you so tightly you'll meld into her bone. She's coming to get revenge. You loved her. You lied. She's not very happy that you watched as she died. End poem. Wow.
I agree, Jean. Thank you very much.
Wow.
Kind of caught you there, didn't it?
Yeah,
all
absolutely.
Right, Katie, this kind of walks up your alley. What do you think?
Oh, yes. This is my darkened alley. I love it. Oh, my goodness. One weird picture. Isn't that beautiful? She's inside one of those Victorian glass domes. That is so cool. Huh. Yeah. So, yes, that is a once beautiful bride, now a decomposed sight. Oh, dear. I think this is great. This is just, it starts to get creepier. You meld into her bones. Oh, she's going to get you. She's coming to get revenge. You loved her. You lied. She's not happy. She's not very happy that you watched as she died. That is a fabulous last stanza. I mean, where does one go from there? Yeah, I enjoyed it. Thank you so much for that.
Nice, Katie. Thank you. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, there's some people you just do not want to piss off. If you think about a ghost as a real person who is dying, and as they die, they see you not for what you pretended to be, but for the real you, who you really were, why you bastard. You never cared to begin with, did you? And it's that kind of hatred, I think, that allows ghosts to stay on the mortal plane, so to speak, and do what they've got to do. In this case, she's a-coming for you. And then, having fulfilled that bit of revenge, pass on wherever it is you're going in the first place. It's eerie, it's spooky, but it has a ring of truth about it that is very uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Nice, thank you. And Jean, you got diarrhea. What about you?
Okay. I thought it was a wonderfully written piece of darkness. It was a great ending on this, ending stanza. I thought that was just, you know, spot on. You know, she's coming to get revenge. You loved her. You lied. You're not very happy that you watched as she died. I thought it was a great job and a nice image that she created as a header for this. So nice work, Darkened Auras, and thanks for sharing with us as always. Excellent job.
Oh, absolutely. Kind of brings note to that phrase, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, especially when she decides, hey, I ain't leaving until I get my just desserts. And that just desserts mm-hmm. is bringing you to the other side. You did it to me. Now I can return the favor. I like it. That last stanza was a nice ringing note. And with that that finish kind of leads it. And then you watched as she died. There's an opening note to that. Oh, there might be something more flavorful as like, what did you do to the poor bastard? I'd like to know. Thank you, DA. All right, Jean, we're back up to you.
You got it. I want to say nice comments, Hope and Nuno. You know, well said. You know, interesting haunting tale is what Hope Soul said. And, Nuno, he said something above there. I can't find it right now. I have to scroll up and jockey around. It's just, it was well done, you know. And I think that haunting was a good word for it. Clever. So, let me see now. The next piece I have, Rex, it has your name written all over it. And this is called Landfill by After the Fire. Nothing personal.
Landfill by After the Fire. I tarry on this landfill of existence like garbage love has simply thrown away. I only carry on through mere persistence as struggles meet me every single day. Like rubbish, I've been cast aside by lovers. Down in the dumps is where I'm doomed to stay. I'm not a treasure that someone discovers. I'm refuse that my family threw away. My heart now sits the sewage of desertion. My spirit eats the scraps of love's neglect. Misfortune now controls me through coercion, and hopefulness has ceased to have effect. It's lonely on this landfill of existence, among the waste, the litter, and the ash. But I am only here at fate's insistence, for I am just another piece of trash. End poem. Whew. That's bleak and dark. And Laurent, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, I always like a well-employed extended metaphor. And this one is, like, you both use it on the word, your word, bleak, very bleak. I only carry on through mere persistence. Struggles meet me every single day. And he begins to enumerate how many times he's been cast aside and by whom. It's interesting that he characterizes the world we live in as a landfill of existence. And I wonder whether he means to apply that only to himself, or does he apply it to a larger world as a whole, implying that everyone has a chance to either throw someone away or be thrown away themselves, both of which are sad to contemplate. Nice poem.
Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was a great piece for a lot of reasons. First of all, I love the rhyme and meter. That goes with that family base. I think that his thoughts throughout were very cohesive. You know, he really holds it together all the way through. And I have to say, I grabbed the first two stanzas. You know, I tarry on this landfill of existence like garbage love has simply thrown away. I only carry on through mere persistence as struggles meet me every single day. You know, I think that he really put this together, and it's sad. It's sad thoughts throughout the way how do I want to say it? it's just the sense of self that runs through this piece. You know, they're sad, they're somewhat painful, and definitely just well expressed. So I have to say that. And this is inspired by their emotions trampled, cast upon the landfill of existence. There's a line out of one of Selena's poems called Blinded. And, you know, it's funny where we find inspiration. Sometimes it's just a line from another poem or, you know, it could be anything from anywhere, you know. And I think that, you know, that's a nice nod to her poem and pulling it all together and you know, representing it. So nice work, Dave, and thanks for sharing with us all.
Nice, Jean. Thank you. And Kate, mm-hmm. How about you?
Well, like Jean, I love a good rhyme. You know, it's good when you don't actually notice it. You know, it's effortless. And the ABAB is just beautiful. I mean, you look at it, it's just smooth as silk. Wonderfully done. I'm very sad, of course. How horrible. My heart knows. Oh, no, I can't read that one again. It's lonely on this landfill of existence, among the waste, the litter, and the ash. But I am only here at fate's insistence, for I am just another piece of trash. Oh, that's... And, you know, people are actually feeling like that. You know, this is... Poetry mm-hmm. is wonderful because it brings to the fore things that you may not consider, that, you know, your next-door neighbor might be in deep depression or, you know, somebody's not got enough to eat. We don't know any of that. This brought to your attention, you know, there are people who are so sad. It makes me feel I have to go out and shake somebody's hand or do something for somebody. And I like that about poetry. It's not like writing a book. It's nothing like it. It's incredible because you can pull anything from anywhere and just make something like this, which I think was wonderful. So thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, absolutely. You're right there, Kate. It's that it offers such a bleak note to one's life, the sort of a desertion, neglect, coercion, this landfill of existence. He's hit on that twice, opening up with "I tarry on this landfill of existence." Using "tarry," kind of, it's worse than lingering. It's almost being buried in it because. Your life doesn't speak much of anything. And then that second stanza, the end line, or the last two lines, I'm not a treasure that someone discovers. I'm refuse that my family threw away. Ooh, the thought of being in such an existence where your entire family that goes from wife, kids, down to parents, aunts, uncles, everybody else having nothing to do with you. There's a certain note of loneliness in that that kind of pushes the existence of why that you feel like you're buried in a landfill, that you're nothing but garbage, and you're offered up at yourself at that last line, for I am just another piece of trash, that thing that is left to rot in a place where everything else goes to rot. There is a hell of an existence all by itself. So nicely done, Dave. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jean.
Okay. The next one running down my list, right? Exactly. The next one running down my list is by Naomi, and I'm not sure if she's calling in, so I'm going to skip over that for a little while. As long as I don't forget that I skipped it, we'll be in good shape. So, Kate, that brings me to you, and if you'd be so kind as to read this piece called Misfit by Weaver of Dreams.
Oh, dear, I can't seem to find my mute button. Oh, dear, I'm having to read this. I hate that. Okay. I am not living on my own planet, so around me is an invisible, self-made dome. Not supernatural, simply otherworldly or preternatural. I do not dislike those that I share air with. I only hope that we are within our own spaces as often as possible, to remain self-contained. I am without that human spark. Though chameleon-like, I integrate, I mimic caring, sharing, being ultra-aware. Although this is now normality, my dome shrinks or expands as required to keep people safe and far away. The hardest part is no matter how many of your lifetimes I spend marooned here, you will always be one can short of a six-pack to me. End poem.
I have a problem with this.
Oh, really?
One can short of a, yeah, you will always be one can short of a six-pack to me. And right underneath that, it says, four fill my eyes. What are you trying to say? Well, I don't know.
Oh, shit.
Jeez.
Typical.
Well, go ahead, Jean. Keep rolling on that thought since you kicked it off with the stucco. And then, damn, was that meant for me?
No.
Yeah, sure, Kate. Come on now. Oh, my God.
I wish I'd written. I should have put down one sandwich short of a picnic. That doesn't sound quite so bad.
Oh, my God. Oh, too funny. You're just too funny. But, gosh, where do I go from here? You know, there's a lot of neat stanzas in here that I was kind of listening to as you went through. But when I got to the end, I just kind of lost all track. I do not dislike those that I share air with. I only hope that we are within our own spaces as often as possible to remain self-contained. I am without that human spark, though. Chameleon-like, I integrate, I mimic caring, sharing, and being ultra-aware. Amazing little stanzas here. You know, each one says something, you know, kind of profound in its own little way. You know, it's not, you know, hitting you with a hammer or anything. It just says what it says. Yes, but definitely the hardest part is no matter how many of your lifetimes I spend marooned here, you will always be one can short of your six pack. I love it. That was a great ending. It really was. I liked it very much. So thanks for sharing with us, Kate. Great job.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Jean. Laurent, how about you?
Well, this is a really well-written piece that examines an individual who maintains a certain kind of arrogance about themselves. Who is divorced emotionally, perhaps, from the people who are around her, those that make up a world. And I say that because there's no hatred. As Katie says, I do not dislike those that I share there. But please, you know, keep your distance. Don't bother me. Without the human spark, perhaps the title Misfit should be stressed. Because if you are a misfit and you can't connect emotionally with the rest of humanity, then perhaps you are without that human spark. I don't mean you personally. I mean what the poem is saying. And normality is that feeling of sequestering yourself, keeping people safe and far away, as if you're going to hurt them somehow, and maybe that's true. You'll always be one can of a sort of a six-pack to me, inadequate, never measuring up, never meeting expectations. Therefore, perhaps that is why the character in the poem keeps people at arm's length. Great writing, Katie.
Thank you.
Nice. I'm going to work a little off of what Laurent just brought up there, that sort of being off oneself. This kind of hits me with the thought of how a lot of places hit that forced consignment of dropping people into a singularity zone, whether it be confinement during the pandemic or just saying, no, you aren't part of us because you didn't do this. And all of a sudden, there's some who ended up misfits and others who became the misfit because there was that no touch of a touch to humanity, that spark of being in front of people, holding conversations, getting a hug, getting a kiss, that thing of interaction which makes us human. Without it, there is no spark because there is no feeling there. So you hit on that idea of being locked up so so long that now you've relegated yourself to that because you're more comfortable, and those that you that try and dabble their way into, you hit them up with that sort of a, you'll always be one can short of a six-pack for me, because like Laurent said, they don't meet the expectations that you now hold because you've been forced into that atmosphere. And we're coming back to you, Jean.
I keep coming back to Eugene as a useless threat because he's never around when you need him. You know? I got to tell the truth. That's just the way he is. So, but I'll be happy to pick up where he should pick up. It's cold on his own. So, yes. Anyway, Laurent, that brings me to you. This piece is called Flint Edition by Reflection Shadow. The carryover from Tuesday. Yeah, thank you. Off mute?
No, I was trying to pick up the link. It wouldn't come. Finally, it came. Flint edition. These pages of scarlet, serpentine tongues, encrypted words, it seems, to those who do not, are not of born dragon blood. That is, by only language between those that are raised in or come from heritage. In your eyes, sparkling on their chapters, from legions of great warriors who rode the skies, powerful incantation, it has this edition of the book, where you will see differences depending on the region. End pause.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Katie, why don't we start with you, please?
Oh, yes. Sorry. I'm here. Oh, I love that picture. That was one of a whole pile of the same type of art,
yeah.
I think. That's wonderful. Oh, my goodness. This is, sorry, I'm just remembering anymore. This is beautifully done. Look at this. Ah, these pages of scarlet serpentine tongues. Perfect. That is by only... Sorry, I'm in your eyes. Perfect. Every stanza is just beautiful. Every stanza just tells you where you will see differences depending on the reader. Now, this is true. This is a thing that I love, the fact that people can take such a different idea on the written word. You know, you can look at it and think it reminds you of one thing, somebody else... you know, makes it something else that's interesting to them. So, yeah, I think this is beautiful. Ah, and your eyes sparkling on their chapters from legions of great warriors who rode the skies. Yeah, that is the kind of book that would be, isn't it? Look at that dragon. Wow. Well, yeah, again, beautifully done. I thought it was a lovely take on that book. Thank you so much. That's very interesting, and I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Nice. Thank you, Katie. Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought this was a great piece regarding the prompt. I enjoyed, first off, I liked how he let in these pages of scarlet serpentine tongues. And I thought that was enough to make me want to read forward from there. But in your eyes, sparkling on their chapters from legions of great warriors who rode the skies, powerful incantation, it has this edition of the book where you will see differences depending on the reader. I like how he makes this book almost a shapeshifter in certain hands. You know, if I'm reading it, I'm going to see this, and if you're reading it, you're going to see that. And I like how he kind of leaves it open to that. And I thought that was clever. So nicely written, for sure. Reflection Shadow. I like the piece very much. And thanks for running for the contest and for sharing with us all. Nice job.
Great. Thank you, Jean. Without actually getting into it, it actually kind of delivers up the note of what it's all about, the sort of myths and legends. You got that picture on the book. Right up front, you get the image of Draco, dragons. And then with the words that are offered up from the not of born dragon blood, the language between these that are raised in or come from heritage, the idea of this is the tales, this is the life of Draco, and also Dracul, sons of dragons, so to speak. So this walks a nice world of not just myth and legend, but maybe a little bit of magic as to those that are born of dragon blood know and understand, while you can just read into and get a glimpse of what who we are. Nicely done there, reflection. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're back up to you.
Okay. And I'm just kind of slow. So here we go. Okay. Coming back up to you. Okay, Rex. Here we go. Okay, whenever you're ready, Rex. And listen, I have to step away for a second. So take your time coming to me for a minute. Thanks.
All right. What have we got? Here we go. Dying and Dream by Ben Hart. She asked me once, who is the painter and who is the poet in you? And I answered, then, before I knew it to be true, I, the painter, fugitive from the mundane, until he finds what perfectly illustrates the outlines of their phantom pain, always on the run from repetition, a part-time schizophrenic, seeing rainbows where others would find none, ignoring the contrast between absence of and definition, erasing with carcinogenic brush, bitter from the sweetest love, taking the time to get it right, not rewrite reality in a rush, hoping somewhere in imperfect periphery awaits the release of epiphany, that his muse basking in the sun wasn't standing on a corner, beaten to ever turn, humming slow her favorite song and still not paying any concern. To him, the one who would just get it wrong, she doesn't want him to erase the only thing she never lacked, just for nostalgia's sake. She wants the bitter to come crashing back. Muse. To him, the one who would just get it wrong, in his poor attempts to capture whatever they enslaved onto his eyes, she lets him know he could never catch her, not before home to Mother March, February flies, and she would have let him in. But seconds was the longest anyone had ever survived when shown the depths of her abyssal soul, and she would have wept. Should she not have killed a part of herself all those years ago in the absence of promised tears? She doesn't seem to mourn their deaths, and that there should be truth to that is perhaps her greatest fear of all. At the bleeding out of God's golden glaciers, she lets it be known she will not be found before a golden tide rises to douse his braziers. Every beacon of hope must be drowned. Pillars of smoke holding up heaven collapse in the mind she commanded to blow, and the wind was so graceful to have somewhere to go. But even Hokusai's greatest fleet of Kintsugi tsunamis washed right through her, like she only existed somewhere between waking and sleeping. Next time, she whispers, it will work. Next time, when glaciers retreat and the whole world washes over me, I will weep. The poets. To him who doesn't think there would ever be a wrong way to ever catch a glimpse of her, and is not afraid to let her exist in absence like a loving bleach, trading everything ecstatic for another round of relapse once more into brackish breach. She asked him once, who is the painter and who is the poet? And he answered, then, before he knew it to be true, they are waking and sleep, they are dying and dream, they are music and motion, golden stitchwork strung from stars, across broken oceans gladly torn apart, only ever to become one when thinking of you. Do you breathe back and forth or up and down? Let me rephrase that. Do you breathe or do you drown? And poem. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, that was quite a poem. You read that quite well for its length. I don't know if you had read it before or not. What an epic piece. Four parts that really examine the perspectives of of a poet who is perhaps chasing his muse, was never there for him, and he blames her, but and he loves her. He loves her while blaming her, and he is not afraid to ask some rather piercing philosophical questions on the existence of love, how people create, whether painter or poet, and one who does not, is not scared of the future. And the perspectives of someone who is engaged in the creative process, who has to write, who has to paint, the difficulty with that, a lot of internal dialogue that you can read things into in this poem, which is complex, sophisticated, deep, very deep, admirable work.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Kate, how about you?
That was very well read, by the way. Beautifully done. Yes, I think this is just incredibly deep, in as much as there is so much going on here. There's so much in this poet's mind that he has to get out. And I love the description of the female side of this partnership. She doesn't want him to erase the only thing she never lacked. Just for nostalgia's sake, she wants the bitter to come crashing back. But I think she just wants change, contrast, because you get the apart-time schizophrenic seeing rainbows where others would find none, ignoring the contrast between absence of and definition. Yeah, I think this is a lovely to and fro. And the picture, oh my goodness me, look at the colors. Wow. That would blind your retina, wouldn't it? Beautiful.
Nice.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kate. And Jean, you back yet?
I am, Rex. I am. Although I'm like halfway between reading it, understanding it, and getting ready to comment on it. So if you want to go first, that would be wonderful.
Okay. Well, I think the opening note there, she asked me once, who is the painter? And who is the poet in you? And I answered then before I knew it to be true. The idea of there is a notion. You look at the picture itself, you offer up the thought with the painter, and there is a certain amount of a poetic dalliance within how a painter puts things to canvas. He'll offer up something, like Kate says, it's illustrated in a lot of great color, and some of that is just for contrast, definitely, but some of it is also up for like a poetic license. Draw your eye to it so that you've got a notion of where everything is going, a little bit of fluidity. But as far as the poet goes, it runs the same way, except the voice rolls into the use of language itself, whereas with the painter, the language comes out in the paint itself and how it's depicted. Now, the thought of offering up the painter first, and then the poet last, but dropping in the muse in between offers up that contrast to both the poet and the painter, but while still giving them their own dues as far as that goes. Because let's see, she hits on the Ben hits on the thought of with the painter, fugitive from the mundane, the outlines of their pain, a part-time schizophrenic. Ignoring the contrast between absence of and definition, erasing with a carcinogenic brush, bitter from the sweetest glow, taking the time to get it right, not rewrite reality in the rush. Again, doing the same thing that a poet would do, but doing it with the brush, offering up a different perspective. And then you've got the poet at the back end of this, to him who doesn't think there would ever be a wrong way, to ever catch a glimpse of her and is not afraid, to let her exist in absence like a loving leech, trading everything ecstatic for another round of relapse once more into the brackish breach. There's that note of the guy who doesn't have the muse to work himself with the words, doesn't have that life that the painter would have as long as he's got a perspective and something which tickles his mind that he can actually put to canvas. There's a difference, yet it walks in the same angle. Then you've got the news in the middle, which kind of offers up a perspective to both ends. And even though, whether it's the painter or the poet, you still need that touch of muse to spark the imagination. So, nicely done, Ben. Was that long enough, Gene?
Such a wise guy, I'm telling you. Yes, it was long enough. Thank you very much. I needed all the help I could get there. I think each was a rich and well-composed piece. Each part of the write is so very well, you know, done and put together. Wonderful share for everyone tonight, and thank you so much for sharing with us all, Ben. That was, it was just an excellent piece. There's a lot to it and a lot for me to kind of take in and whirl around my little brain, so but it really was very well put together. I love the sections of it, how you broke it down, yes, and how you addressed each one. Well done. Thank you. Thank you. You got me just enough time so I can pull it together. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So now, for my next magic trick, I'm going to put this piece up called Dark Man from the Shadows, come by Allison Hodges, and I'm going to give this one a read. Dark man from the shadows come. A pale-skinned girl with golden hair, I searched for her. She wasn't there. She's lying on the closet floor while watching for the cracking door. Covered with dirty clothes, she hid, wondering what it was she did. Mom never noticed in the night or in the evening saw her fright. She never saw her darkened eyes, never seemed to realize. When teachers asked what's up at home, she clammed up, silent as a stone. She looked to Mom to shield us from dark man from the shadows come. But Mother turned her back on us and whispered, children, please don't fuss. We've things to do, I haven't time for your small whimpers and your whine. Mom lost her soul again each night by not protecting, though she might. Instead, she left her on her own, left her in the danger zone, never comforted her pain, as every tear was cried in vain. End of poem. Wow.
Great read, Jane. Thank you very much. All right, Katie, why don't we start with you, please?
All right, my dear. Love your accent. Yes.
Which one?
Well, I don't know. The English one, very interesting. You sound like somebody from the Victorian era. I expect you to be doffing your hat anytime soon. Okay. Oh, man. Yes, I know. Beyond redemption, sorry. That man from the shadows come. That is just the most... Oh, it's... Ah, every word is just so sad. And, you know, we hear it time after time. It's abysmal. It's disgusting. It's awful. And when your own parent either doesn't realize or closes their eyes to it because they know that's the only way they're going to keep that place together, why would you want to keep that place together? It's not a home. It's an absolute nightmare. Yeah. I hope to goodness this is fiction. I hope this isn't something that's actually happened to this poet, because it's cathartic to get this kind of thing out. We all have those things in our background of our childhood that made us what we are now, and not necessarily happy, but putting a face on it and just, you know, getting on with life. But it's there. And it festers in the background, and it ruins every relationship that you ever have, and it makes you feel like nothing, and it's awful. And I've got a nice big cane with a lovely crystal filial on it, and I'll be using that if I ever hear of anybody near me getting into pain like this. It's just so sad. So thank you, Alison. I found it thoroughly eye-opening and very beautifully written. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Kate. And unfortunately, she drops in her AM. This poet is about my mother's failing to protect us from abuse. So, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. And Laurent, how about you?
ironically enough, this mother seems to be the character in Katie's part, someone who is so distant from everyone else that they couldn't pick up on signals from their child that all was not well and there was something going on. Children who are victims of abuse sometimes blame themselves. And that's kind of alluded to in the first stanza, covered in dirty clothes, she hid, wondering what it was she did. And then to have a mother so preoccupied with all the small details of her own existence that she couldn't see one of her children in pain and inquire after what was causing the pain, and perhaps suspecting, which is even worse, what caused the pain, but pushing it away from her so that she doesn't have to deal with it. Heaven's time for your small whimpers and your whines. Wow. Powerful, powerful piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Lenore. And Jean, you got three. How about you?
I thought this was a painful piece, sad and very well penned. My heart broke throughout the read. How could it not, you know? And when I finally got to the end and I saw the AN, that was it. I was totally crushed by it. For being, a true story, I feel that she handled it with a lot of grace, and that's right. She said what she had to say, but she didn't dig into it or wasn't about the boo-hoo me thing. I give her a lot of credit on that. Sometimes it's a hard thing to do is find that fine line, but the last stanza is the one that got me. Mom lost her soul again each night by not protecting those she might. Instead, she left her on her own, left her in the danger zone, never comforted her pain, as every tear was cried in vain. It was really something, and I thought the emotions were very well expressed in it. So thank you so much for sharing with us, and wonderful job. Yes.
This is a gripping piece. Those first two stanzas are almost gentle, but then again, you got that note in the second stanza. When teacher's aunt looked up at home, she clammed up, silent as a stone. But even the teachers noticed the difference in what was going on, yet mom did not. And then those last two kind of walk the back end of, it's almost, there is that note of ignoring. Children, please don't fuss. We things to do. I haven't time for your small whimpers and your whines. So there's almost a willing note to what's going on, ignoring it outright because she doesn't want to believe it, or knowing something's going on, yet still not doing anything about it. And that last stanza, losing her soul again each night by not protecting through the ocean might. Instead, she left her on her own, left her in the danger zone. Never comforted her pain, and every tear that was cried in vain. It kind of hits on that note of maybe the mother was working nights, and the gentleman, since the father isn't mentioned, my guess is would be the boyfriend, is left with the girls each night, and that's when things get a little off the chosen path. Yet it's still ignored, which is a really sad tale to what is going on and what is being ignored. But nicely done, Allison. Quarantine, we're back to see you.
Okay. Well, we have a station identification break because my daughter just handed me an almond joy bar. Just saying, you know.
how's that going? Do you remember the commercial back in the day? Some people feel like an some people don't.
Sometimes you don't.
Mounds almond joy. Mounds almond joy.
I feel like a nut every day. Oh, my God. I don't know why I felt the need to say something like that, but I had to say something, so it wins. Okay, Stelina, don't encourage me. I'm bad enough. Kate, can I get you to read this next piece by Babbler? It's called Pennies.
Yes, of course. Happy. Okay, Pennies. I was brought up in a place where three little words, the biggest little words, were copper coins in the couch cushions, always there but never what anyone was looking for. Found in parking lots, purse linings with failed seams, sticky cup holders in a brown 1982 Toyota hatchback, abandoned and unworthy of bursting out a car window for. Other words, bigger words, $5, pull out the dictionary, call bullshit in Scrabble words, those are few and far between. Unbelievable, like Santa and the Tooth Fairy. Nonsense that was good enough for other kids, better kids, not me, whose house was skipped on holidays and ate cheese sandwiches because no one ponied up the dough for my 40-cent reduced school lunch. Scrounging together loose change, rolling up some self-worth, mother's pocket change, laughter, laughing that I was fine as long as I didn't go to prison. So you'll have to excuse me if these Benjamins you wave in my face reek of cocaine and ass crack, another ploy to lure me into a dark alley. Remind me of a Carlos Rossi wine jug, where I came from with a mouthful of copper and less dignity than a single from a strip club. Paper can't be pinched between the teeth to check for authenticity. Felt out for denomination. I don't know the soft crinkle of linen, only the metal clink that hardly amounts to anything despite years of hard work. Washington turns his cheek, but Abe looks at me straight on, honest, solid, and certain. Not counterfeited or pressed, not the kind of worthy of mentioning during our braggadocious tirades involving bottles of black label champagne in the exclusive bathrooms of places I've never set foot in. Hard stuff, indestructible. That's what I'm built on. Three little words that work themselves into pavement cracks, little change trays at gas station registers, grandma's pocketbook, good enough for buying thoughts, single gummy bears, and tossing into wishing wells. The little things, the biggest little things, and little else. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Damn, back-to-back eye poppers. Whoa. All right, Laurent, why don't you kick us off, please?
Can you return to me, please?
Gene, how about you?
Thanks, Laurent. Appreciate it. what a wonderful piece this is. There's so much in it. You know, between not being able to check the authenticity of a dollar bill, you know, what is this? Oh, God, I don't know. It's so much. Copper coins in the cap's cushion, like we all relate to that, I'm sure. Always there, but never what anyone was looking for. You know, pennies, they don't really seem to be very much. They do add up, though. God bless them. They do add up. God. Going somewhere. There's so much here I have to like kind of revamp it and go through. This one cracked me up. Carlos Rossi wine jug, where I came from, with a mouthful of copper and less dignity than a single from a strip club. Paper can't be pinched between the teeth to check for authenticity. That whole little thing there just had me laugh, and I'm like, okay. But I did really enjoy it. I thought it was very well pulled together and so much detail to wrap. You know, it really had a lot going on. What's this here? Good enough for, okay, great. That's what I'm built on, three little words that work themselves into pavement cracks, little change trays at gas station registers, grandma's pocketbook. Good enough for buying thoughts, single gummy bears, and pressing into wishing wells. The little things, the biggest little things, and little else. You know, I love that. You know, that penny for your thoughts idea in there was perfect. Wonderful job, Bather, and I want to thank you for putting this up for us tonight. I really enjoyed it. It's just a lot of it for me to kind of grab that real quick. But well done. Great piece. Thank you very much.
Nice. Katie, how about you? You got to read it.
Oh, it was wonderful. Bather, this is really, I loved it. It just hurtled along. I was trying to slow my voice down as I didn't want to sort of like scrabble the words up, but it just, there was this momentum where you just had to keep going. I could barely take breath. It was so good. My favorite. Pull out the dictionary, call bullshit in Scrabble words. That's just, isn't that brilliant? That was so clever. And yeah, all the places that you find these little coins that nobody really wants, but people actually put them in a jar. I don't quite understand why you'd want to do that, because all you've got is a jar full of pennies. I know they add up, understandably, but it's not nice to look at. It's boring. Put a plant in there. But yes, this is Mother's pocketbook changed laughter rattling that I was fine as long as I didn't go to prison. So you'll have to excuse me if these Benjamins you wave in my face. Sorry, can I just ask a question? I know I'm completely,
sure,
completely ignorant on a variety of things, but what's a Benjamin?
Oh, it's $100 bill.
Oh, blimey. Didn't come to mind when I saw the word Benjamin. I was thinking like a little chocolate biscuit. Obviously not. I thought, who'd turn down a chocolate biscuit? Don't be silly. Yes. Mind you, the next line can... Oh, I'm sorry, Barbara, but that next line really works for me. Reek of cocaine and ass crack. My favourite perfume. Ah, well, it's wonderful. Thank you so much. There's an awful lot into this, which I really enjoyed. I love the way you got it to move so much, containing so much. So thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Katie. Laurent, how about you?
I was stuck for the longest time on the three words. You know, I love you seems to be too easy and not necessarily what was being after. I don't understand three other words. I am less are another three words. And all of a sudden I realized that maybe there are no real, absolute, just three words, but there are many combinations of three words. The money seems to be tied to emotion in a way that I find very appealing. I was brought up in a place where three little words, the biggest little words, were copper coins in the couch cushions, always there, but never what anyone was looking for. You know, and then she goes on to describe other words, bigger words, that were few and far between. And these words were, it seems to me, like words that were, you speak when you're speaking about truth. They weren't there for that. Poverty certainly plays a part in this. My house was skipped on holidays and ate cheese sandwiches because no one ponied up the dough with my 40-cent reduced school lunch. Once again, a few pennies describing a circumstance and what those few pennies managed to buy and what the larger pennies would not. I don't know the soft crinkle of linen, only the metal clink, which is, you know, money's made of linen, actually, longevity. The use of Washington, Abe, and Benjamin were certainly well-placed. Tossing into wishing wells the little things, the biggest little things in the world, like money, all the things that she wished for were relatively, were wished for, excuse me, I'm stirring up what I intended to say. The small change in her life was good enough for the buying thoughts that were just like singing gummy bears. You're not going to get much for your money. And those things that were important, this is a cost in the wishing wells of little return, shall we say. This poem took me by surprise. It has a depth that confused me initially. I had to go back and read it like three times. But once I did, it began making an awful lot of sense. Great work, Ben.
Excellent. And I get where you were going on that. I think those three little words, those biggest little words that she's referring to are I love you. Because everything in this reeks of that which doesn't work. The copper copper coins and the couch cushions were those three little words. Because at that moment, she understood the value of holding that kind of a weight in her hand as meaning for her life. Because they provided her with the money for that school lunch, because nobody else was divvying up that 40 cents. It was going to that bottle of Carlo Rossi, that her parents were drinking in that notion. She understood that much because that's where the dollars went. It kind of gives me that thought of the old adage, what was it? Take care of your pennies, for the dollars will take care of themselves. So you understand the weight of pennies. You understand the weight of going forward. And she learned it as a little girl because she needed those coins, the penny you found in the parking lot, the cushions of the sofa, in the back seat of the Toyota. Anywhere you can find a little bit of coin, or even if you had to rummage through mom's purse or grandma's purse, because they weren't going to give it to you. You had to take it in order to survive. You were getting cheese sandwiches at home, but at least at school, you might be able to get that small hot meal once a day, 5 days a week, that gave you sustenance, because the sustenance of I Love You was not apparent in this piece at all, and it wasn't coming from home where it should have been coming from. And that's the whole thing of because she hits on that notion that Santa and the Tooth Fairy, nonsense that was good enough for other kids, better kids, not me. She understood the value of, she wasn't considered valuable, but she understood the value in those copper coins because they meant livelihood, sustenance, and at least a meal for that day. Great.
And everyone yeah, always has a big old jar of pennies somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
True, but apparently these pennies, they kind of fell in between everything else because everyone was too lit on Carlo Rossi. So you had to scratch what was lying around. Sad, unfortunately. But another look at that last poem on a different level. Abuse comes in many packages.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I got you there.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right, King.
Okay.
We're back up to you.
Okay. So, Laurent, that brings me to you. This is a piece called Tapestry by Laurent Devon. Whenever you're ready.
Tapestry. A tapestry hangs lifeless, brownish gray, flecked with age, faded and blurred by time. A woman, sad-faced, holds her arms across her nakedness, not coyly inviting interest, but with the melancholy of used flesh housed in a cheek of noir. She has seen 35 winters, all lodged in the grinding poverty of her time, when skin was all the wealth one had. Years of etched fear and resignation across once fair features. Her button nose gone to mushroom, broken by one too many blows from the abuse of men daring her poverty, poorer yet for their anger. A small silver ring worn at her throat on a thin chain, her sole adornment. A lone bit of brightness shining dully in the mirror, her abandonment and sorrow. A cat laps water from a chipped dish at her feet, dimly calico in an uncertain light, warming her feet at night under thin sheets, the only beating heart she has left. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Katie, why don't we start with you, please?
Could you get back to me, please, and give me 5 minutes?
Thank you. Sure.
Thank you.
Jean, how about you?
Thanks, Kate. Don't throw me under the bus tonight. I'll see how this is going. I thought this was a great write, Laurent. A lot of details in it, imagery, thoughts. She has seen 35 winners, all lodged in the grinding poverty of her time, when skin was all the wealth that one had. Years have etched fear and resignation across once fair features. The way you write always has a lot of detail and a lot of imagery, and you fine-tune your work that way, and I always appreciate that. But this was wonderful and very expressive. You know, I have to say this last stanza, a cat laps water from a chipped dish at her feet, thinly calico in an uncertain light, warming her feet at night under thin sheets, the only beating heart she has left. This says a lot there, you know. The cat is the only beating heart she has left. Yeah, sometimes it's easier, I guess, to shut it off, you know, not have expressed. So just well done. Well done.
Thanks, Jean.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jean. All right, Laurent, you labeled title as tapestry, and you kind of hint at it being a tapestry itself, which it very might well be, adorning the thought of that which a bygone era where things were a lot less certain, where women who didn't have a husband were usually tempted to the streets because that's where the money was. And this, you hit a hint on that with the sort of the cheap boudoir, the 35 winters all lodged in the grinding poverty of her time, where skin was all the wealth one had, again, offers up that notion to the fact that she was forced into an arena where you're looking at anywhere from, say, at least the 1920s back, where women didn't have all the rights they had today. And the only thing that made them money was offering up their bodies as temperance, for at least. But this kind of hits the note of the cheap boudoir offers up the note of a cat house, because you hit on the fact of the button nose gone, the mushroom from too many blows. Again, a sign of those times. The small silver ring is the only thing that she has, which is worth anything, that she wears that as a necklace. I like the thought in that last stanza, the thought of dimly calico in an uncertain light. That offers both the thought of the bulb itself being kind of off color to the point where the cat is offered up both white and orange in the moment, but might be both either white or orange as a whole. But because of the light, you only get a certain glimpse of it, so you get that calico flavor. And the only beating heart she has left, she has her own, yes, but that cat offers up a certain kind of intimacy that she doesn't get from anything else in her life. The intimacy of the cat needs her and she needs the cat. Nicely done.
Thank
and
you.
Katie,
very much.
You're welcome. Katie, how about you?
Yes, oh, Laurent, this was a very telling piece of poetry. I really, really enjoyed it. For me, the part that hit hardest and made me think was a woman, sad-faced, hold her arms across her nakedness, not coyly, inviting interest, but with the melancholy of used flesh housed in a cheap boudoir. That says it all. I mean, women have been chattels from the very moment we stepped up and ate that apple. We always have been nothing but chattels. And the very hard thing to come up from or to rise up from, you know, that's your baseline. You know, in the working world, one doesn't only have to be good at one's job, one also has to be better than anyone else to make it. So talking from experience, because I was paid half of what the guys that I was training were being paid, and I had to fight for equal pay for women. I understand that side of it. A woman, not so much now. We are a little more gritty, and we do tend to stand up for ourselves a little bit more, but it's not been an easy ride. So, pardon the expression. Sorry. Freudian slip. So thank you. That was beautifully written. I enjoyed it.
You know, I had seen a picture that showed a woman who was unclothed, but was clasping one arm across her breast and kind of trying to shield herself. And I thought about the picture and kind of put a story in back of it. And then thought of describing something that I had seen in a tapestry, perhaps representing a life, but which now hung lifeless. And what was the story behind that? So thank you very much.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Thank you.
Excellent. All right, Jane, we're coming back on you.
Okie doke. Well, for my next magic trick, I've got to make sure I'm not on mute. I'm going to put up this piece. It's called The Girl She Used to Be by Selena. I am not. You're so silly. God. the abuse. Anyway.
Good try,
Selena. So I'm going to go ahead and play the audio for this. I think she's so darn funny. It's kind of funny. Here we go.
What happened to the girl she used to be, who had so many paths she wanted to tread, beguiled by the sirenous call of the unknown, naively unaware of where it led? The other paths were strewn with flowers and mossy knolls to rest a while, dancing on rainbows and billowing clouds when each part of her was touched by her smile. A sweet secret shared in a lover's tryst, her dreams were whispered by golden leaves. The lyrical lilt of her liquid laughter was carried upon the autumn breeze. Further into the woods, where trees wept tears of blood and pain from broken boughs, over desolate plains she trekked in vain, where naught but the gelid wind soughs. Yet days grew shorter as time grew weary. With each sunset her lonely laughter faded, till silence filled the air ominously, and her shiny life began to look jaded. Each star was doused with the flow of age, its luster languishing in the abyss of space, and she glowed no longer in the mirror's reflection, with each trial and tribulation etched upon her face. Now she mourns with each hapless day, for there are no more paths to ponder, overgrown with weeds of waste, no more rainbows for her to wander. Harmonious hues have all been washed away, the pots of gold have all been claimed, her joie de vivre drowned in despair, her adventurous spirit cruelly tamed.
Great read, Selena. Thank you for the sound pad. It is very much appreciated. And damn, this kind of walks the same line as yours, Laurent. What do you think?
Not only that, but this entire evening has been filled with poems that are melancholy and sad, and it's pretty amazing how this mirrors some of the other poems. Like, everybody got together and said, all right, this is going to be Mournful Friday. No happiness permitted today. Two stanzas. Now she mourns in each hapless day, for there are no more paths to ponder, overgrown with weeds of waste, no more rainbows for her to wander. Harmonious hues have all been washed away, the pots of gold have all been claimed. Her joie de vivre drowned in despair, her adventurous spirit cruelly tamed. Yeah, by a life savaged by the world at large, you know, turning us away from who we were, transformed into something else, somewhere else, deviating from the direction that we hoped to go in, perhaps, as the poet says. What happened to the girl she used to be, who had so many paths she wanted to tread? And now it's almost as if you've reached a point where you live in a cul-de-sac, so round and round, no more paths to follow. Stunningly delivered, great piece.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. And Kate, how about you?
Yeah, this was wonderful. I really enjoyed it. It's a look into someone's life as they go through it, taking different paths, wondering if the path they took were right. Selena, am I right in thinking that lovely lady is you? because I see the smile is the same. So cute. Yes. Other paths were strewn with flowers and mossy knolls the rest of the while, dancing on rainbows and billowing clouds, and each part of her was touched by her smile. Yeah, I can see that. Yes, it's about life, and it's about the choices we make, I presume. And unfortunately, again, you see, as women, we tend to be put in that little box. Now she mourns with each hapless day, for there are no more paths to ponder, overgrown with weeds of waste, no more rainbows for her to wander. Yeah, beautifully perceived, and very, very pathos here. There's a what if, what where, you know, when did I take that wrong path, at which part of my life has led me to this? So yeah, beautifully done. A cry from the heart. I thought it was wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Kay. Jean?
That's me. Selena, this is a wonderful, wonderful piece. Well written from the beginning, from the first word. You know, what happened to the girl she used to be, who had so many paths she wanted to tread, beguiled by the sirenesque call of the unknown, naively unaware of where it led. You know, we all have these ideals when we're young of what we want to do and how we want to do it. And we just want to follow our heart and kind of dance our way through it. And there's nothing wrong with those thoughts. There isn't. It's just that they don't always happen like we want. You know, one thing or another bumps us and we step off that path and we're going down another, or we make a conscious choice to do something different at one point, not realizing it's going to change all the rest of it. And I think that it was wonderfully expressed in this piece. You know, it gave the scenarios. And I have to say that the last two stanzas are really like, now she mourns with each hapless day, for there are no more paths to ponder, overgrown with weeds of waste, no more rainbows for her to wander. Harmonious hues have all been washed away. The pots of gold have all been gone. Her joy de vivre drowned in despair, her adventurous spirit cruelly tamed. It's such a harsh ending, but I think that sometimes that's just the way we feel, you know, when we get to that point where we can no longer go back and do the things we thought about. So wonderful job with this, and nicely done, nicely expressed.
Absolutely. Those first three stanzas kind of hits the note of the promise of what is to come as life unfolds, especially in the last two lines of each of those first three stanzas, beguiled by the sirenesque call of the unknown, naively unaware of where it led, dancing on rainbows and billowing clouds when each part of her was touched by her smile, and then the lyrical lilt of her liquid laughter was carried upon the autumn breeze. Then that fourth stanza offers up the turn of where things go from there, further into the woods where trees wept, tears of blood and pain from broken boughs. Over desolate plains she trekked in vain, where naught but the gelid wind soughs. Nicely done on that stanza. It offers up the turning point in her life, because that, the last four stanzas narrow down, are kind of that trek into as the reality in age steps in and offers up. Yeah, you've already hit the hard part of life. It doesn't get any easier from here, and now you've got to be ready for what's going on. Her shiny life began to look jaded. Again, a little deeper look into it, and the trials and tribulations dashed upon her face. A little bit more age sets in, and no more rainbows for her to wander. Now the life is pretty much well gone. The hope is rolling into despair, and then her adventurous spirit cruelly tamed, the spark finally gone altogether. Nicely done, Selena. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're back on you. Yes, no, maybe?
Jean? Maybe.
She's working her way out from under the crowd.
Never know. Okay, let's see now.
Right. I'm coming back to you.
Yeah.
This is called Tales of Crumbling Concrete by Nuno Cardoso. Or Cardoso,
oh.
I think. So whenever you're ready.
Tales of Crumbling Concrete by Nuno Cardoso. The walls around me speak full of truth, right? Walls naked of feathers must tilt their heads up and open their beaks, waiting for a mush of chewed-up worms to slide down their throats. Twit, twat, trill, pick. Look at them still on the shelves after I publish them. The walls around me lie like a hiss from a wildcat also, right outside screen, inside the lamppost light of a dying star, reminding me that LSD is forbidden, yet the puss does not bat an ear. Oh, fellow reader or young poet, if only you knew that eating at my table is a dangerous place to take inspiration from. Do you not taste the mold? Here, I'll allow you to lick the walls, now savored on the tip of your tongue. Toot, 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 toot. That's right. Smack your teeth on it. Melting, are they not? Do you not see the walls sloshing down like gray mold lava? Hot it is. Hot it is, this pile of moldy mud that I am. Obsidian poet of past downpour rivers, drum rolls accompany the crack of a tulip, inferior to three but superior to love itself. Truth? Father, help us all, for I cannot tell shit from flies. Droppings could grow wings and buzz around my ears on a summer day, and a thousand eyes could peep at me from the pool in the toilet in which my bum rests. I could not tell. Do you weep in the solitude of your white flag, white fluffy pillows as I forge this poem atop Babylon? I do not, and neither do the walls in my room. Do you? And poem. Gene, we can start with you. Maybe?
I would love to accommodate, but I have to like kind of look over this a little bit more. So I have to kind of move into somewhat else
okay,
right now.
Down the road. Laurent, how about you?
Certainly. When we're insecure about things, We seek sustenance wherever we can get it. That includes walls of naked feathers, or as a wall of naked feathers, if you want to take that analogy, waiting for a mush of chewed-up worms to slide down their throats. You know, please feed me. Please feed me. Look at what I've done. Look at my books. They're right there. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Do not partake too deeply of me, else you will launch yourself into a very strange fantasy, that dangerous place to take inspiration from. Do not taste the mold, the mold of age and mold of disuse. Again, that uncertainty, not knowing whether something is excellent or poor that you've done, but you hope. A powerful piece with a little bit of gentle humor in it somehow, an abstraction that is not quite abstract, but close enough that it, readers got to pay attention.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. Katie, how about you?
Yes, this is such an interesting poem. I really enjoyed it. It makes you think. Here we have an entity, a person, who knows themselves well enough to be aware that they can be dangerous to people who might be drawn into their lives, thinking it's cool or it's the way they want to be. But this person knows from experience that it's not all it's supposed to be. We all put a face up and try to pretend we are what we're not. So he's saying, basically, don't take me at face value. It took a lot for me to get to this place, and it would take the same for you if you follow the same path. I'll allow you to lick the walls. Now savor it on the tip of your tongue. okay, not going to happen. I thought it was beautifully written. I really enjoyed it. I love the looking into the fact that Father help us all, for I cannot tell shit from flies. Droppings could grow wings and buzz around my ears on a summer's day. That's it. You see what you want to see. And this is telling us that we can't really do that. Quite dangerous. So, yes, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I really enjoyed it. So well done.
Nice. Thank you, Katie. And Jean, we're coming back to you once more.
Okie doke. I'm glad that this is an intriguing piece with so many interesting images. Clever and abstract, right, for sure. I grabbed up these two stanzas. Here, I'll allow you to lick the walls. Now savor it on the tip of your tongue. Smack your teeth on it. Melting, are they not? Do you see the walls sloshing down like gray mold lava? Hot it is. Hot it is. This pile of moldy mud that I am. Okay? Okay? It's definitely, like, got all this stuff happening. And, intriguing. It's intriguing. And it was well put together. So I can't take that away from it either. Wonderful job. So thanks for the share, Nuno. And, I hope to see you again next week. Take care.
Absolutely. Nice piece. I think the Tales of Crumbling Concrete opera, the thought is, as a title, is it for the edifice of what once were libraries? Because he does hit on the idea of look at them still on the shelves after I published them. Know the books that go languished unread because why? Nobody has a need to go to the library anymore, although you can go and find things that you might not be able to find on the internet anywhere, because libraries contain a lot more than just that. And that thought of, I do like the abstract note in this, walls of naked feathers must tilt their heads up and open their beaks, waiting for a mush of chewed up worms to slide down their throats. It offers up that thought of learning by being fed something, the note of knowledge right in that note, because he hits on the shelves filled with books. And then, again, the walls around me lie like a hiss from a wildcat also, right? Fireflies outside scream inside the lamppost light of a dying star, reminding me that LSD is forbidden, yet the puss does not bat an ear. So that quiet note to a cat lingering nearby, not here in the world yet. You're still languishing within this medium. And I like this thought, oh fellow reader or young poet, if only you knew that eating at my table is a dangerous place to take inspiration from. Do you not taste the mold? Again, that thought to the books. And again, that thought to learning. Here, I'll allow you to lick the walls. Now savor it on the tip of your tongue. That's right, smack your teeth on it. Melting, are they not? Again, there is so much to be learned, yet they're not being taken advantage of. And then, Father help us all, for I cannot tell shit from flies. That kind of hints at the back end of nature. If you do not take a note in knowledge, then you cannot tell the shit from the flies, because it's all but the same. You learn nothing. Nicely done, Nuno. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okie doke. Kate, I have a piece for you to read. This is called Mad Poet by Hope Soul.
Okay, thank you. Give me one moment. Sorry. My blooming voice is going. Give me a second again, sorry. Thank goodness for the mute button. You would not have liked that noise. Mad Poet. Mm-hmm. Oh, that picture is... Mm-hmm. He calls himself a lunatic, with eyes drunk of warm sangria. Whatever the trick, just make it stick, even if it makes him sick. Gulp it down, drip, drop, channels of red running down your chin, gladly challenging the night sky, howls at the arguing moon. Goes a fire stick, giggles till it hurts, plum red cheeks, matching bloodshot eyes. Look who's coming home for dinner. There he goes again, crawling around on all fours to create art. roll over, expose your tummy, show me your teeth. Canine molars, all of what can bite. Porous and glazed china will never be the same after tonight. One-handed tobacco rolling, charcoal black tip. Sure, a talented one ain't ya. Means mugging the empty pack till it's pissed enough to fight back. Mad poet, sad poet, acting on today's news. What can measure up to you? Madman, that poet, eccentric man. Finger painting on my spine. Dip your toes in secondhand smoke so I can eat your gunpowder. Load me up, shoot, splat on the window. Another poem, penning another right. Cheat codes to fill the pages. Essence of your life. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. And I'd say Gene, but I'm going to go to the long first. Give Gene a minute.
You are so cute in a boyish kind of way there, my friend.
Oh, hell.
Sometimes we're too cute for our own good. You got to be careful now. Mad poet by Hope Soul. You know, he calls himself a lunatic with eyes drunk off warm sangria. Whatever the trick, just make it stick. Even.
Rob, where'd you go?
He fell offline.
I think we lost him. Oh. Wow. All right, Gene, you get to take over. Maybe that was my cue. I shouldn't have gone that way to begin with.
Yes. I don't know. It's pretty interesting. I have to keep my eyes open just in case he comes back. I thought this was a great write by Hope. I'm really slow. I got to tell the truth. It's late and I'm slowing down. He calls himself a lunatic with eyes drunk off warm sangria. Whatever the trick, just make it stick, even if it makes him sick. Gulp it down, drip, drop, channels of red running down your chin, sadly challenging the night sky. Howls at the arguing moon. Kind of an awesome lead-in to the poem itself. It's a lot of detail and a lot of, it just walks you down this path about this poet, you know. And, you read it and you learn a little bit, you learn a little more. And then, you get into the rest of the poem. You know, one-handed tobacco rolling, supposed to, expressing what he's all about. But I think that it was really, it was well done. There's a lot more to this than just a poet, you know. I mean, there's so much going on with this person's manner, you know. Mean mugging the empty pack till it's pissed enough to fight back. Mad poet, sad poet, ashing on today's news, what can measure up to you? Madman, that poet, eccentric man, finger painting on my spine. Dip your toes in secondhand smoke so I can eat your gunpowder. Load me up, shoot, flat on the window. I don't want to say abstract, but definitely has a whole different flavor. It's not, straight to the point, And that's good because it makes you dance around it a little bit, which I found to be intriguing. So nice job, Hope, and thanks for sharing with us. I'm still not a lot, so.
Nice. Thank you, Gene. Katie, how about you?
Well, I think I'd like to spend an evening with this couple. It sounds like fun. He calls himself a lunatic with eyes drunk of warm sangria. It is a step back look at what's happening. It's almost a documentary feel to this particular piece of poetry.
Mm-hmm.
There's love and there's caring and there's participating, but there's also this, I've seen this before and I'm taking note of it. Are there any warning signs here? That kind of thing. It's not cold and it's not, it's none of those things. It is just basically somebody taking a look at someone else in their normal fashion, the way they would normally be. Nothing unusual about it. I love the one-handed tobacco rolling. Wow, wish I could have done that. That's so handy. Anyway, I thought it was wonderful. I really enjoyed it. I love the mad poet, sad poet, passing on today's news. It's just beautiful lines. And so thank you very much, because I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Ah, thank you, Kate. I enjoyed this, the thought mad poet, and then the picture, so you get a look at what she's offering up, but also the language is right from the get-go. He calls himself a lunatic, wild eyes, drunk off warm sangria. Whatever the trick, just make it stick. Even if it makes him sick, gulp it down, drip, drop, channels of red running down your chin. The notion there, getting into the idea of, and the feel, because everything from that first bite warms with the thought of red. You got sangria, channels of red running down your chin. Even that thought of howling at an arguing moon offers up a red motif. And then the fire stick, again, with the red, plum red cheeks, bloodshot eyes. Everything revolves in that notion of red, whether it's the anger or drawing upon the anger to let out the best that you've got to offer. And it's a, there he goes again, crawling around on all fours to create art. Roll over, expose your tummy. Show me your teeth. Canines, molars, all of what can bite. Porous, unglazed china will never be the same after tonight. It's almost a thought there of a transformation. And the one-handed tobacco rolling, I like that. But the back end of this was really good. What can measure up to you, madman, that poet, eccentric man, finger painting on my spine, dip your toes in secondhand smoke so I can eat your gunpowder, load me up, shoot, splat on the window, another poem, penning another right, cheat codes to fill the pages, essence of your life. There's almost a nice quiet note right there to Bukowski, offering up that raw bit of imagery and life itself, spitting out the moments, whether it's, they used to say, puke on your typewriter in the morning and clean it up later in the afternoon as the notes you edit in. So this kind of walks the very same thought of in the moment, whether it's the because of the sangria, howling at the moon, it doesn't really matter. And that's just the motif that colors the imagination in the moment as this thing comes to life. And he, all of a sudden, he's alive in the moment, offering up that thought. And it's cleverly done. Thank you very much, Hope. All right, Jean. We're back to you for closing potions.
Okay. Well, what I can say is I want to thank everyone for calling in tonight and everyone else for sharing their poetry. Wonderful work. As I say, I do have 4 carryovers for next week, and I apologize to anyone who did get carried over. We have Poetic Picasso, S. Sharp, Namdeg Somo, and Robert M. They'll all be next Friday's board starting us off. And I want to thank you all for sharing. Don't think that it wasn't because I didn't care. You know, just we can only talk so fast. But what a wonderful collection of poetry we had tonight. So many great pieces, intriguing and just well-written stuff. So thank you all for that. And Rex, thank you as always for co-hosting with me. Weaver, my friend Katie, I appreciate you being here and hanging out with us. It's always a joy to have you around. You're so damn devilish. And hopefully we'll do it again soon. It'll be fun. And today's Friday. Oh, 12:30, we have a Part Sinner, Part Saint with Babbler and Pam Wright. And then tomorrow we have Gray Ice Smith, Bad Company. So hopefully you all give us a listen, and we'll talk to everybody then. Y'all take care, and thanks for everything.
Good night, my dear.
Good night,
everybody.
Good night,
Good night. Good night, my dear. Take care. It was wonderful. Where is she?